Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on yet another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I must admit, I have been having a lot of fun hosting these shows, learning from our guests, talking to our audience. I think I finally hit my groove, and these shows are just amazing and taking off. So you know what time it is. I do the same thing every day, every morning. I invite you to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show, because there's someone in your network, someone in your house, someone in your friend group who needs this information. Maybe they're an entrepreneur, a small business owner, or maybe they're just someone who wants to better themselves, but they need this information, and they won't have this information unless you share it with them. So go ahead and wake them up, send out that text, send out that tweet, send out the email, but let everyone know that the Roundtable Talk Show is live. So while you're introducing the show to your network, I'll go ahead and introduce our very first guest. And our very first guest is Dr. Joni Carley. Dr. Joni has been consulting and coaching with leaders and their teams for over 25 years. Her expertise in values-driven leadership and cultural development draws on a unique depth and breadth of experience, ranging from the jungle to the boardroom, from the C-suite to the podium, the African bush to Asian temples, and from universities to the United Nations, where she is vice chair of the Coalition for Global Citizenship 2030 and chair of their Policy and Advocacy Subcommittee. She is also a member of UN Major Groups Commons Cluster, UN Committee on Spirituality, Values, and Global Concerns, and the UN Committee of Religious NGOs. Good morning, Dr. Joni. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm excited. I read all of your information and I'm like, wow, I'm impressed. I'm excited to have you here on the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you and what are you passionate about?
I am passionate about what drives people, really deeply drives people. And what that kind of translates out into is values. I've been working with leaders who want to do good and do well for long before it was a distinction out there. Now people understand, actually the data is clear that you really can't do as well if you don't do good. But we've been taught this, what I call the fluffy myth, that doing good comes way after you work on the profits and the numbers and all of those kinds of things. But the data doesn't bear that out. There's absolutely nothing that substantiates that fluffy myth that we've all been acculturated to. And I break apart in my book, The Alchemy of Power, Mastering the Invisible Factors of Leadership, that just like an iceberg, you know, you see like 10% of the iceberg on the top. That's the strategy, that's the goals, that's the, you know, the things that people do. Down underneath is where most of the iceberg is and where most of what makes things happen lives. That's in our world, it's the metaphysical. Metaphysics is the study of what causes what. It's a science and it's a philosophy. And it's looking at what is causal, what makes things happen. And we know that values drive people. And when, and culture is really important. Down below on that bottom of the iceberg is where the idea of culture sits. And I think it was Steven Pinker said, culture eats strategy for breakfast. Because it doesn't matter what good ideas, what goals, what strategy you have. If you have a culture that's not going to bear that out, think of it like a culture in a lab dish. So it will grow some things. It won't grow other things. Your workplace culture is the same. It's going to grow prosperity. It's going to grow innovation. It's going to grow all kinds of great things if you build that culture, if you take the time to manage it. And you can't manage it if you don't measure it. So that's something I like, the wisdom stuff. I've been all over the world learning from the wisdom traditions, and I'm wonky too. I like the data. I like the numbers. And so I think it's important to measure and quantify your culture. And that's a service that I offer. Basically I'm about the quadruple bottom line and making that really robust: people, prosperity, planet, partnership, and peace. And we know that when you go full spectrum like that, you do better on every one of those. And we no longer can afford to pigeonhole our ideas of what success is, because it has not been a game plan for the planet. It hasn't been a game plan for leaders' well-being. And it really hasn't taken their businesses to where they could go.
Powerful, Dr. Joni. One of the things that I like is that in all your five P's, I feel like if you do the first four P's, you'll wind up with peace. And I think that's all we really want as humans and as a society is to just have peace on earth. I'm going to come back to you, Dr. Joni, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Sharon Bolt. Sharon is known as the Mindset Media Expert. She helps business owners and entrepreneurs to get ongoing publicity so they get in front of thousands or even millions of their dream clients as the go-to authority in their niche. She also focuses on helping them change their limiting beliefs, sabotaging behaviors, and negative expectations so that they feel confident, dream big, and reach their full potential. Good morning, Sharon. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well. I'm so excited to be on the show.
I am excited to have you. And something tells me you're not in the United States.
No, I'm in the UK. I live probably about an hour's drive south of London.
Oh, wow. PR. That's one of those things small business owners, entrepreneurs are always excited about. How do I get in front of the media? How do I wind up on the news? And so they're always looking for a PR representative or a firm. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do and what you're passionate about.
Well, I first got into this because it was really a personal thing because I had a complementary therapy practice and it was successful. I had no reason to look elsewhere. And then we got these two little puppies. They're Parson Russell Terrier puppies, brothers from the same litter. And I wanted to get them onto some puppy socialization classes. And everybody said, all the dog trainers said to me, it's the worst case scenario. They'll fight for the top dog position. They'll do what they're like. And it gets so nasty, you'll have to rehome one. And I just looked at these two little puppies and I thought, you know, it's like choosing a child, isn't it? I couldn't do that. So I looked at them both and I remember saying out loud, you two are not going anywhere. So I was on a mission. I was on a mission to keep both my dogs and it was all going well. I was learning their language. I knew it had to be different from the conventional dog training methods because I'd been told it was going to be, you know, I was going to have to get rid of one by the conventional trainers. So as things progressed and it was about a year into the journey and everything, I'd got so good at this and I was having such great results with my own dogs. I started to introduce some consultations into my complementary therapy practice clients. And then I was listening to a BBC radio station here in the UK and they said that they was going to get a dog training expert on the show. And I thought, you know what? I can do that. So I pitched the show. It was, in fact, three times. Now, bearing in mind, I had no dog training business. I had no dog training website. I had no followers, no subscribers. I had nothing. But I had the passion. I had the belief and desire that I could make a difference. And after pitching them three times, I sat in the London studios live on air speaking to 6 million listeners and giving dog training advice. And that's how it all started. It was an easy transition into my dog training business and the start of my PR and media career. And then over the years, people kept saying to me, what do you do? How do you do it? So that's how my business, Get Free Publicity Today, was born.
Interesting, but it would seem to me that with the publicity that you receive with your dog training business, that maybe you would have decided to grow that business instead, as opposed to going into PR. So what happened with the dog training business?
Well, that continued for many years. And nowadays, I also have another business called Good Dogs. And my dog training courses, they sell all over the world. So everything's online. So that all works very easily. I still do regular media interviews about dog training. I have a regular dog training slot on BBC Radio, which I've had since 2008. So I've continued that and grown that business. And that really takes care of itself now. But more recently, and a few years back, that's when I just, my passion was about helping entrepreneurs and business owners how to do their own PR, how to be there and just really about media training and getting rid of those limiting beliefs and expectations and sabotaging behaviors that tend to hold people back.
Well, I'm definitely going to go ahead and take a look at some of those. I know with me running for Senate in the 2024 election, I'm going to need plenty of your notes, but I want to come back to you, Sharon. I'm going to go ahead and introduce our next guest, who is Mr. Tom Scarta. Tom is a certified franchise expert. He was the number one franchisee of the year with his first franchise concept and failed miserably in his second franchise. The lessons learned from failure is what makes him such an expert. Tom is the author of several books, including the number one bestseller, Franchise Savvy. He has helped more than 1,500 people figure out if franchising is for them since 2005. Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm excited to have you here. What's going on in your world?
This is a blessing. I am so excited. A lot of stuff going on in the franchise world, I'll tell you that. All good, too. And I'm excited to talk about that.
We can talk about that before we go too much into the franchise world. So I wrote a book. I'm not going to just make this all about me, right? But I wrote a book, Signs You Might Be an Entrepreneur, How to Discover the Entrepreneur in You. And everyone loved the book, got great feedback. Someone read the book and they said, Sharifa, it was a great book, but the one thing you left out is you didn't mention franchises. And I was like, what? Oh, I didn't, you know, really think about that as far as starting off a business. So for those of our listeners who aren't very familiar with franchises, can you explain a little bit more on them?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to say that you did not make a mistake, because franchise ownership is owning a business, but it's not entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. right? So it's a business with training wheels. You're buying into a system that has the blueprint. You just kind of plug in and run the program. And with a great franchise, you could, you know, grow multi-units and do very, very well. But it's a symbiotic relationship. The franchise company really wants to help you be successful, because they're making money on the back end of what you're producing, and you're keeping a majority of the profits. So you want to do well. And the other franchisees in the system also want to help you, because you're all building equity in the same brand. And the more of a brand household name that you can grow, the better off your profit will be when you go to sell the franchise.
Mm. So what's the difference between a franchise and an affiliate?
So an affiliate I think it's very different. Let me start with a franchise. So a franchise, the whole industry is regulated by the government. The Federal Trade Commission oversees franchising. So we watch out for the legalities, make sure that there's no scams going on, that it's not money laundering, or it's not, you know, terrorist groups trying to get money out of, you know, there's a lot that goes into the sale of a franchise. An affiliate is being just, you know, like Amazon.com is just a giant affiliate link, right? They don't really own or manufacture anything. They're just affiliates of all these other brands that are selling on their platform. So that's a good way to think about affiliates, in my opinion. So an affiliate is just being an associate of a business. You might promote it and make some money on the back end of it as you're doing the promotion on behalf of somebody else's product or service.
Mm-hmm. With franchises, is there usually a very high overhead to where many people don't see it as an option? Because we're entrepreneurs, and I know you discussed this at the beginning as far as making a mistake, but with entrepreneurs, they're usually interested in just finding something that they can do for themselves, finding a business, and maybe it is a franchise that would still be a business that they can own and run.
So the way I feel about it is that if you're a true entrepreneur, you're someone that has an idea that you must bring to fruition, hook or crook, it doesn't matter, you're going to make this thing happen. A business owner, a lot of times, I'm going to say 95% of the time, is someone who had a job for a number of years and either decided that they were frustrated, kind of cringed at the thought of going to work in the morning, and they knew they had something more to do. That was my story. And so you end up buying into a franchise opportunity, and you don't need to buy into something that has to do with hobbies or something that you're passionate about, because it's merely just a vehicle to get you what you want in your life, just like a job is. You know, as you probably heard in the past, someone who buys a drill does not really want a drill, but they want the result, which is a hole. And so people that buy a franchise, they don't want to start from scratch. They don't want to reinvent the wheel, but they want to have the result of what a business could provide, which is a lot more time and a lot more freedom.
Excellent point. Tom, I am going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Paul Bruno. Paul has spent 20 years researching, writing, and studying early Jeep history. He has spent countless hours and treasures to tell this story to the world, first for the big screen and now twice in book form. After visiting key sites in the story and years of research, including at the United States National Archives, he combined his knowledge of project management and history into the 2014 book, Project Management in History, The First Jeep. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. And nice to meet the other people on the panel.
It's nice to meet you. I read your bio and I love interesting people, people who do things that the typical average person wouldn't think of. And so I'm reading it and I'm like, are we really talking about a Jeep, like the history of a Jeep?
Absolutely. About 20 years ago, I ran across how the first Jeep was created by a bankrupt car company in 1940, in the incredible time of 49 days. And I said, that sounds like, and at the time I was beginning to write screenplays, and that sounds like a great story for a movie. And in case you wonder, you've never seen a movie about the story of the creation of first Jeep, is because that never got produced, shockingly. But through all that journey, I kept getting drawn more and more into the story, more and more into the story. And around 2011, decided to tell the story in book form. And continue to do research and found out in the National Archives, there was a court case in the 1940s where, long story short, they basically delved into what happened in 1940 and 1941 in incredible detail. And I used all that information. I'm going to take Dr. Joni's great, whoops, can't see it because of my background, but to create a book, The Original Jeeps, and then the first book, Project Management History, The First Jeep, because I have interest in that. And it's just a story, and I really concentrate on early Jeep history, 1940 and 1941, that most people don't know, but that you see on the road 80 plus years later, and the DNA of every single Jeep that I've seen that ever has been built, millions of them, really come back to these first three and what they did to create for the Army in really impossible circumstances, and literally miraculous how it all came about. So the story continues to fascinate me, and I continue to research it. I used to work in the information technology world. I have a passion for history and project management. So I've tried to combine all of them in my work.
So do you have a passion for battles and research on battles?
Actually, I do. Military history picked up right on that one. For since I was a kid, even in elementary school, history and military history has always fascinated me, and so fits right into my personality and interests.
Oh wow! So tell us about American Battlefield Trust.
Oh, that's a group that has been around for a long time, and what they do is raise money to preserve battlefields across the United States. They originally were for just the Civil War, and then they expanded to the War of 1812 and the Revolutionary War. So I really support their work and what they try to do, because I've visited a lot of battlefields. The National Park Service, I'll give them a plug. They have so many national battlefield parks, and they're just so well done, and the people that are there are just passionate about the battles that they have that's at their park. So it's good to support that work.
Do you ever do any reenactments?
No, that's not my thing. No, I mean, like getting outside and doing something. I mean, I'm busy in the archives, you know, not getting any sun.
I don't know. Sometimes people like to get out there, put on their uniform, put on the hat and reenact it.
Oh, absolutely. And that's a real passion for many, many people, and a wonderful thing that people do. Just not something that I necessarily have been able to get interested in.
Okay, well, Paul, I have many more questions for you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Thaddeus Parkland. Thaddeus retired from the pharmaceutical manufacturing world in April of 2018 after serving as Director of Business Development for a contract manufacturing company in Dallas, Texas. His 15-year tenure in pharmaceuticals, including business development, financial planning, operations, along with quality. With this vast experience across both service and manufacturing components of the industry, he gained a wide perspective, allowing for quick business analysis and decisions. Good morning, Thaddeus. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me on here. I appreciate the time.
Thank you for joining us.
I appreciate the group here. It seems like we all have a commonality in that we're all doing something to help other people. When I retired, I had the opportunity to tell a story via writing a book that was a family story of my dad being a stolen baby. And wonderful opportunity. I took it and wrote the book. When I got into trying to publish the book, I discovered the uphill battle, which I think most of the people here have, of getting a book into the marketplace, because there's a lot of nuances that have to be achieved, but most people don't know. And what I found is there's a lot of people that aren't willing to put the effort into what we call self-publishing. So I created a company that has two arms, but what I'll talk about today is a company that's specifically a publishing house. And what we've done is create a method to help people write books with support via editing and all those types of things that are necessary, but not charging astronomical fees or making it impossible to get past the door to have a conversation with someone. Everyone has a story to be told. Some of them are amazing. Some of them, you know, it's amazing to them, but maybe not to the public. But regardless, we want to support those people in helping them tell their story. I've met so many incredible people, and they just get frustrated at the steps that it takes. You know, they don't understand all of the things that you have to do, buying an ISBN, you know, what the cost outlays are to a book. It's costly. I think everyone here knows pretty quickly it's not cheap to do that. So in short, what we did was create a pathway for people to do that. And that's what we're doing mostly with our business today. We've had 4 successful books published, so I'm excited to see that growing. We're only, you know, 18 months old, so we're still kind of in the uphill shove, but it's positive. And I like what Dr. Joni said about the work is always there. That's the great part of the underneath, is not the success at the end, but the path to getting there.
One of the things that we've seen over the past year with the global pandemic is more people with time on their hands. So all of a sudden they want to write that screenplay. Paul was talking about his screenplay. They want to write that book. They want to venture out into something that they haven't done before. Have you seen an increase in new authors?
Oh, there's a huge increase in new authors. And with the pandemic, I guess a positive of the pandemic has been it has allowed people the opportunity to do all the work they need to do to take a book to marketplace. What I'll say is where I've found the most use in helping people is that they've not understood the business aspect of it. They've not understood how to calculate a gross margin or what they need to do to earn income back from this passion that they have. I think the passion's amazing, but at the end of the day, there are bills to be paid and there are things that have to be done. So there's reality of business with the passion.
So I hadn't taken into account too much the business aspect, but when I speak to my different guests, the one area many of them talk about that they're struggling with is the marketing aspect. Okay, I finally finished this book. I have it out. I released it. And whether they go with a publishing company or they self-publish, they kind of run into the same problem, or same challenge rather, because the publishing firm still wants them to market and push the book themselves.
Correct. And it's interesting, in my journey, I have talked to, I would say, well over 100 different literary agents as a means of, you know, getting the book into place and getting their attention and getting them interested in your project without giving up a large portion of the proceeds from the book is practically impossible. So what we've done is taken a little bit of approach of, you know, we promote it through our publishing house and through our website, but we also have given the people the information they need to contact friends, to contact colleagues, to contact people who may be in the know, maybe someone that's specific to the industry they're writing about or someone in the family that knows that that's well-versed. So they use that means to go out and touch people, tell two friends, that methodology.
Interesting. Tom, do you have a book?
Yes, I actually have 3 books.
Okay, we did talk about that earlier. I'm sorry, I'm 45. My memory is not what it used to be. But you help people with the affiliate process. I'm off again. The franchise process.
Yes. So what I do is match people with franchise opportunities based on skills and personality and goals, kind of like the eHarmony of business is what I like to call it. And I help people figure out if really business ownership is for them first and foremost, and then if it is, which of the 4,000 franchises that span 90 different industries would be the best fit for that person's endeavors.
When you published your book, when you launched your book, were you very familiar with the business aspect of it?
Not really. Really, what Thaddeus was talking about was kind of my struggle. I had to figure it out as I went along. You know, I just thought that, oh my goodness, it's going to take forever just, you know, to get the words on paper. That was only half the battle. And then came all the stuff that Thaddeus was talking about. And so it's great that he has such a, I guess it would be a very pointed process to get you through everything that you need to know. Because there's a bunch of things you just don't know because you've never done it before. So it's kind of similar to buying a business. You just don't know what you're getting into. So I'm here to educate somebody before they pull the trigger and waste a lot of money and time.
Absolutely. Was that your experience, Dr. Joni?
Well, I have a chapter in a book with Deepak Chopra and Jack Canfield called Stepping Stones to Success. And both of my books, I was invited into, so I'm a little spoiled that way. the publisher reached out to me to do The Alchemy of Power. And, you know, but that being said, you know, it was several years of writing over a lifetime of experience to condense into, you know, years of getting research and experience into something that was usable. And then at the end of the day, whether you publish it yourself or a publisher publishes it, if you haven't already sold a million copies of a different book, you're really low on the totem pole of what people are going to put out there. So I was in a seminar, you know, a business seminar many years ago, and the guy started it with a $100 bill in the air. And he said, I'm going to give this $100 bill to the first person who tells me the right answer to this question. What business are you in? Well, you know, I'm a realtor, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm a consultant. And somebody said, well, I'm a psychologist, but I'm really in the marketing business. And he gave him the $100. And the lesson is, no matter what business you're in the marketing business. No matter how you come into the publishing industry, you're in the marketing business of your book. And it is an area where that is probably definitely my weakest link.
Thank you. Paul, what have you seen with your book?
We were able to tap into the Jeep community. Mm-hmm. So we've done okay there. But the one point I'd like to make about the Jeep and why the story really resonates with me is there's so many things about it that people don't know. And just to give one example, since we have someone from the UK here, most people don't know that there is a United Kingdom connection in early Jeep history, and that the company that built the first Jeep, the American Bantam Car Company, was the successor of the American Austin Car Company, which was founded by the creator of the Austin 7, which was an English vehicle in 1926. I never knew that. And so that was one of the nice things to bring out is the Jeep, right from the beginning, was an international vehicle. So I had to honor Sharon here and let her know that when you see a Jeep the next time, know there's an English connection in there.
Sharon.
That's amazing, Paul. That really is. And you'll be delighted to know that we actually do have a Jeep.
Even better.
Interesting. I have to go check out some Jeeps. Thaddeus, we heard Dr. Joni's response to her book, Tom and his thoughts, Paul putting out his book. What are your thoughts, Thaddeus?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as Joni said, you are in marketing. If you're in your own business, you are in marketing. That's the reality of what you're doing. If you're not promoting and you don't believe in what you're doing, regardless whether it's writing a book, a screenplay, whatever it is, if you don't believe in what you're doing, the success is going to be a real uphill battle because you've got to be out touting and sharing that love and that passion to make it grow and go. Absolutely.
Many people have a concern that if they don't have a million followers, or like Dr. Joni was saying, they haven't already sold a million copies of the book, nobody's going to pay any attention to them. Nobody's going to take them seriously.
Well, that's absolutely correct. When you get into the large scale publishing houses and that, you've got to have high sales dollars for them to even talk to you. What I tell people is, first question I ask is, are you doing this because you love to do it and you want to tell the story? Or are you doing it to get rich? If you want to do it to get rich, you probably should go talk to the franchise guy and have him help you develop a business. If you're doing it to tell your passion, then the passion will grow. Just like the Jeep story, you know, the book was a means for him to share the passion out. And in the Jeep community, who I've owned a Wrangler as well for many years and love to play on them, they have such passion about their vehicles that allows them to share it and grow it. So I think that's true regardless. You've got to market it, but that marketing's got to be based in passion. It's got to be based in excitement of why you're doing what you're doing.
Yes.
Can I interject something?
Yes.
So I agree with what everyone is saying. And the first book I published, The Magic of Choosing Uncertainty, which is how to manage change and embrace fear and live a fulfilled life. I wrote that in 2014. And when I was, quote unquote, shopping it around, one literary agent said to me, listen, the only difference between a publishing house and doing it yourself is that typically when you do it yourself, and you want to get on the, Today Show, or you want to sit with Oprah, it's most likely not going to happen. And you do need to have a published book by a house to do that. So that's sort of a distinction to think about it. And also to I think it was Paul's point, you'll never get rich off of a book. You're going to get rich off of the things that or make some money off of the things that come out of the book, whether that's seminars or other things that you can sell, get on the stage and get paid to speak, that kind of thing. But the book itself, even if you're self-publishing, it has a greater margin, but it's not enough to pay the bills, even if you're selling hundreds of thousands.
Okay, so what we're gonna do, we're gonna partner up. So whoever is trying to get rich, Thaddeus is going to give Tom those people. And then the people who really want to get their message out there and talk about the passion, we're going to give those people to Sharon.
Right.
You ready, Sharon?
Yes.
We got a bunch of authors. We got to get their story out. How are we going to get our story out?
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to you, Sharon.
Well, the number one thing is obviously it all depends what type of book it is. I mean, I like Dr. Joni, I was very lucky because I was asked to contribute to two books. So it is a lovely way when that happens, because obviously then you don't have to worry about the publishing and things like that. But for people that want to get media attention about their books, it all depends what type of book it is. If, for example, it's a book of your life, then there's a lot of people and a lot of media that's going to be interested about your story. So as we know, everything's about our story, who's behind the business. People are very interested in that. And of course, with journalists, they are professional storytellers. So you need to come up with an angle that is a story. So with Paul, for example, when he, his love, this is a lifetime of love for him, the passion behind it. So what aspects of it was difficult? What did you find that people were interested in? And things like when you're talking about your passion, just to a friend or family, what are the things in your story and what you talk about? Where do people lean in? Where do they say, tell me more about that? Oh, that's interesting. These are all really good angles to be pitching the media. And, even like podcast shows, there's so many podcast shows that are just about people's story. So if your book is about your story, then, it's already really good. But also to look at things like, maybe your book is not about your story. So let's say, I love this with the Jeep, Paul. So, it's dear to my heart too. But, you know, if there are any awareness days, you know, that are linked to Jeep, that is a great angle to pitch because you are an authority, you're an expert about Jeep. Oh, and by the way, I've written this book. That's the real thing to do here. It's by the way, here's my book. Not here's my book, this is about me. It's how can I educate and entertain your audience? That's the difference here. So it's finding different ways, but awareness days are really good. So if there's national days about cars or Jeep itself, that's the time to pitch. Or maybe a celebrity is pictured and they have a new Jeep. This is a perfect time for Paul to be going out there as a spokesperson, as an expert on Jeeps, to be given all the authority about it, what to look for, how to get a good deal, and the history behind it.
Powerful, Paul. We just gave you a whole campaign there.
I appreciate that. You're talking to me? You're talking to me? By the way, that's now the worst De Niro impression that's ever been done. Thank you very much. But I would like to say about going to the Pash, and that's really the key. I think Thaddeus brought that up. And there's other benefits you get. One of the things that I've been able to get from my journey is I have met so many wonderful people in the Jeep community around the world. And that is something I could not have anticipated when I went on the journey starting over 20 years ago. And that continues to be maybe the greatest benefit I get out of it. And if you write your story and you're passionate about your story, you know, I totally agree. You're probably not going to pay your bills by it, but it gives you a sense of purpose and being able to tell the early Jeep history and the different things that come from it has been really a blessing. So that's some things for people to keep in mind.
Yes. But when you share your story, you just light up. When you start talking about the Jeep, you can see, like, you look like a 8-year-old boy. You can see the excitement. And I think it's a wonderful thing. And it just reminds me of another show where I was talking to this woman and her main item is she likes to knit. Everything that she does, she knits. She probably could have knitted the mittens for Bernie Sanders. Yeah, but her thing was knitting, and we were asking her how she found new people, and she was like, it's in the knitting community. I'm like, I didn't know there was a knitting community, and she's like, there's a community for everything. I'm like, okay, so now I see there's a whole community for people who love Jeeps.
That's correct, and I'm just grateful to be a part of it, but before I forget to mention it, I want to, Dr. Joni, this is a quote that I feel like, with permission, I will steal. Culture eats strategy for breakfast. I have lived that. Thank you for sharing that one. Well, it was definitely worth the price of admission. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's Peter Drucker. It's not mine, but it is really true. It's what, it, like a culture in a lab dish, it's what it holds all else. And it is the determinant. You can have all the good numbers in the world, but if things are falling apart underneath, it's just like the bottom of the iceberg is bigger. That's what the ship's going to hit first, even though it's invisible.
Yes. Dr. Joni, I wanted to ask you again, we're in a global pandemic. So many people are struggling, suffering, going through so many different challenges. But the one thing that has been different is that it has affected us, the entire world. It has affected everyone in some form or fashion. So some say, and I believe that it has also helped to unite us on a global, you know, function, faction. What do you say, Dr. Joni?
Absolutely. And this is where my work at the UN really comes in. In fact, as soon as we finish this call, I'll be working on the World Interfaith Harmony Week celebration at the United Nations.
I want to go. Am I invited?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I want to go. I want to talk to people. I want to unite the world.
If you look at the page, the link is there, and it will be sent all over. But yeah, you know, we have a brand new opportunity in this world right now to live the way that everybody wants to live, in peace. They want their kids to go to bed safe, fed, and warm. And what we're finding, science has found this for a long time, but what the world really cannot any longer ignore, is that we are interdependently co-arising. That, you know, what's happening, the quantum physicists say, when a butterfly flaps its wings in Hong Kong, you know it in New York. Well, you know, that's true at every level of society, of every level of what we do. You know, from within a three-person office, if one person is playing scapegoat and, you know, not having values fulfilled, if there's lying or cheating or information hoarding going on or game playing, the whole business suffers. It just, you know, and the world can no longer escape this. And so as horrific as the conditions are, not just with the pandemic, but, you know, nuclear annihilation is kind of like right on the brink. We really have a lot of major global problems and local problems, major local problems. But we can no longer deny that we are all interdependent. We're all woven into one, Martin Luther King said, one fabric of humanity. And until, you know, we need to build new policies and practices around that. I'd love to just step back a minute and talk about personal story, because that's what in my chapter in Stepping Stones to Success, which if you go to Joni Carley, JoniCarley.com, I'll send you a free, the four main chapters from this book for free. I talk about my time staying in the jungle with a tribe of headhunters and how they informed my understanding of leadership. So it was really a life-changing thing. We got in there in a tiny little plane. There was no airfield. It was just a cleared off little space. You had jungle boots and dugout canoes, and that was transportation. And you know, the technology went downhill from there. So, but you get to the essence. There was no lying. There was no cheating. There was no stealing. When they went to war, they depending on who you ask, they no longer headhunt. But
they're retired or recovered, which one?
You know, hard to say, but if you look at it this way, you know, what is there to recover from? Because the chiefs went to another tribe or to another sect that they thought were powerful enough to be threatening, and they removed the heads of the most challenging warriors. Only, you know, one, two, or three of them. They never heard a plant. The idea of hurting a child during warfare is just off the charts, would never happen to them. Most of the time they spend laughing and loving and, you know, I mean, just to hunt the little wild kind of rat-like things that they eat for meat is a lot of work, because they use blowguns I couldn't even pick up. But but still there was this laughter and joy, and we trekked through some pretty scary situations. And you know, all my degrees in the world meant nothing compared to these people who were attuned to each other, to the land, to conditions around them, you know, and who really valued culture so much. They just didn't lie to each other. It wasn't like they tried not to lie or tried not to steal. It wasn't in the cultural fabric.
I think that's the fabric of America, but I don't think I said that out loud. But Dr. Joni, you are the only one that could try to make us love headhunters. I'm like listening to you. You're like somebody's wonderful aunt. And you're like, but these are wonderful. These are, I'm like, wait a minute. Are we not discussing headhunters? And when you start talking about headhunters.
That's how we do war. We slaughter mass populations. We accidentally bomb hospitals. I mean, you know, this is, and we think this is a noble way, and that headhunting is, you know, and this comes to a lesson of, we get acculturated into these ideas of what's right and what's wrong. And it's not always what we think it is. And so when we turn this on their heads and you say, well, three men were slaughtered, their heads were brought back and treated in a ritualist, I know this sounds really gross, I mean, to our sensibilities, but they're treated in a respectful, ritualistic way. The energy is sewn and shrunken inside, and the warrior who killed gets a certain, you know, there's a ceremony around the energy being now owned by this, you know, so there's a respect all the way around, but there's a deep respect for all the life that surrounds this, way more respectful, even though a lot of our warfare, we try to ground in Christian theology. That doesn't really hold, but we do try to get away with it on that. And they have been infiltrated by Christian missionaries. So there's a lot of Christian thinking interwoven, and the missionaries there who came many years ago really respected both cultures. So it's woven in, but there is a much deeper respect for life, much deeper.
Interesting. Thaddeus, do we have a book on headhunters?
Well, not yet, but I think one's coming now. Joni's put it out in the universe, so thereby. You said something that reminded me of a favorite quote of mine that says there is no right or wrong. There is just merely opinion. And I think in life we get stuck on the right and the wrong instead of understanding the perspective the other people are coming from. It may be right or wrong in our value system, but for their value system, we need to understand. I think in the United States right now, with all the diversity and craziness that we're seeing, if we can step back and understand, just as the missionaries for the headhunters, that they have a system that means a lot to them, how do we integrate? I think that's a critical, amazing thing you pointed out there. Thank you for sharing that. A
famous Rumi quote, beyond the field of right doing and wrong, beyond right doing and wrongdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When our souls lie down in that grass, all is possible.
Nice.
I'm gonna come hang out with you. I don't see another chair, but I know there's one somewhere. I'm gonna come hang out with you. We're gonna talk about this further. Sharon, we're gonna get the book from Thaddeus. We're gonna talk about these headhunters. How are we gonna get the love story about the headhunters out there?
Well, I think Dr. Joni's passion in itself, and as you say, the way she explains it and the passion behind that, I mean, there's an audience. There is definitely an audience there. And of course, because it is a little bit controversial, that's also very interesting to the media as well. So it's really about coming up with different angles. Again, seeing what's going on in the news. I love that. It's called newsjacking, where, you know, how can you put what you're trying to promote, how can you hook it or newsjack it, piggyback it onto what's currently going on in the news? So that's what I would be doing. I'd be keeping my eyes and ears open and seeing what's going out there. Again, awareness days, you know, it's anything you can link in there. That's what I would do. But I think that passion and the story behind it is a bestseller.
Yes. Tom, do you do any news jacking and piggybacking?
I certainly do, especially when I was doing a lot of writing for Entrepreneur Magazine. It's a very interesting concept, and to learn how to do it, it's definitely worth the time. And I'm sure Sharon could really teach us how to do it well. But to be able to take a current news story that's happening today and link your story to it, it garners a lot of clicks. And you're able to share your story under the guise of something else. Like, where I got a lot of hits at one point was when one of my idols passed away, Muhammad Ali. And I did, you know, 5 business lessons from Muhammad Ali and got it published that weekend because I knew, you know, the editor at Entrepreneur. And just garnered a lot of clicks. It had really nothing to do with, you know, his death. But it was so connected. But I turned it to business to talk about what he would have thought about franchising if I ever got to talk to him.
I like that. And it reminds me of one of my accomplishments. Out of everything I've ever written, from my articles to my press release, the number one story that I wrote that was picked up by everyone was years ago when Tom Cruise jumped on Oprah Winfrey's couch. And I just really wrote this article that basically had nothing to do with anything, but it basically said, this man is happy. He's living his life. He's enjoying it. Just let him be happy. And that was like the whole point of the story, but my phone rang and people were like, can you come speak? Can you come speak? The Inglewood Scientology organization actually called and asked me to speak. And I was like, it wasn't about Scientology. That wasn't my focus. It's just like, the man's happy. Why are we so mad? Because this man is happy. Paul, do you ever feel like that?
Well, you said I really enjoy early Jeep history, but I figured we could combine the whole panel here with a new venture. I'm going to team up with Tom on Headhunting Adventure Vacations franchise. Thaddeus is going to publish the book about it. Sharon's going to promote it, and Joni's going to write the book about it. So we're all in, and then we'll make sure that as part of the adventure tour for the headhunters, which I never thought I'd actually be talking about, we'll make sure they drive Jeeps. So we're good.
Excuse me.
All in, everybody.
Excuse me. Hello. Sorry. I missed my, where was my role in all of this?
Well, your role is to provide the ultimate publicity through your shows regularly on adventure, headhunting, adventure, vacation adventures.
I see you're a hell of a negotiator because you added that regularly in there. So that was the clause that meant I can't just do one show and that was it.
Well, that was me trying to dig myself out of the hole for forgetting you, Sharif. So, you know, hey, I got to dig myself out of that hole here. So you caught me on that one.
He's a screenwriter as well, so you can just star in the film that will be the after effect of this. So
thanks, Thaddeus. Anyone else wants to bail me out, feel free, jump in.
Thank you. But I don't know if Dr. Joni is going along with this because everybody else gets to do all the fun stuff and we didn't have Dr. Joni do all the work.
But my last point is she's already lived the adventure, though. So she's our prototype. So that was a great story, Dr. Joni, seriously. And I appreciate you sharing it. Different perspective. It was very powerful, actually, all kidding aside.
Yes, I agree. Now, we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Thaddeus.
Oh, thank you very much for the time. What I would say to anyone is if you have the passion or the desire to write a story, reach out to us at p1press.co and tell us what you're looking for and how we can help you achieve your dream, and we'd be happy to serve.
Absolutely, thank you. Sharon.
Well, if you're a business owner or entrepreneur and you want to get your voice out there, you've got a message and you want to change the world in what you're passionate about, just go to my website, which is getfreepublicitytoday.com, or one word, getfreepublicitytoday.com. There's lots of freebies on there. So there's a free webinar that I'm hosting at the moment that you can sign up for. There's some all different types of products, from really low products to just opportunities for you to work directly with me too. So just to the website, getfreepublicitytoday.com.
Absolutely, thank you. Paul, what do you have for us?
If anyone's interested in the ultimate underdog story of overcoming impossible odds, they should definitely check out Early Jeep History. That's one of the main things that drew me to it. This stuff should have never happened. And underneath, you know, shameless blatant plugs, they can find the book, The Original Jeeps, at Amazon.com, or go out to our website, originaljeeps.com. A lot of early Jeep history out there, but that's what really drew me to the story. It's incredible, impossible odds overcome by these individuals to create an icon.
I have to check it out. Definitely want to check that out. Thank you. Tom, what do you have for us?
Hey, thank you so much for everybody sharing their stories. And I didn't get to really talk about my passion at the beginning. So my passion is to really help people not really just change, you know, their career trajectory, but my passion is to help people choose uncertainty over unhappiness. Many people sit in a job and just hate what they're doing, but they got to pay the bills. And I'm one who could tell you from my own experience, you could choose uncertainty and make magic happen. Prior to getting into franchising, I was actually a subway conductor, or for Sharon's in the UK, I worked in the underground. And I did that for 13 years before I bought my first franchise. And so I went from there to franchise expert all in a matter of a few years. And if you want to hear more about my story, and Sharif, because of your great listeners, I'd love to give anyone who wants a copy of my book, Franchise Savvy, for free. I'll give you a real book. Just email me at tom@thefranchiseacademy.com. Again, tom@thefranchiseacademy.com. Get a free book. No questions asked. No kidding. Just, you know, learn about franchising. It's not what, you know, you don't need $1 million. There's financing. There's a lot of money out there. And I help people find their passion through a franchise opportunity.
So I want to ask you, and I don't know if you can answer this question, so if you don't want to, feel free, because I know people want to know what is the number one franchise to get into. But, you know, sometimes we can't make certain recommendations for whatever reason.
Right. No. And I could just say that you'll be surprised. The number one thing that I would get into would not be anything that you would think. It has nothing to do with food. It really has to do with helping people. through your business, through your franchise. And those kind of businesses survive really well because of what Joni was speaking about earlier, that, you know, the quadruple or, you know, bottom line, you're really helping people, the profits will come. And so there's some great franchises out there that talk to those issues and really, really help people, help communities. And it's not about the best chicken sandwich or whatever, but, you know, there's a lot to talk about. Matter of fact, there's a whole book about it.
He's like, I wrote the book on it. You have a podcast as well, Tom.
Yeah, I have the Franchise Academy podcast, and it actually started as a radio show. I was on the radio for a few years and realized that a lot of people are not listening to the radio anymore, but they listen to podcasts in their cars. And so we turned it into a podcast 2 years ago. Franchise Academy is the podcast, available on everything with great podcasts can be found.
Well, we have to get it added to my new podcast directory called Potterly, so more people can find it. Thank Dr. You. Joni, you're welcome. Dr. Joni, what do you have for us?
Well, I really encourage any small business owners to account for your culture. You can't manage it if you don't measure it. And I offer a small group assessment for small businesses and nonprofits, so we can measure it on 7 levels. Doing good in the world is the 7th level, but if you're not making profits, you don't have best practices, you aren't full spectrum, you're probably not going to do as well. And so I hope people take advantage of that. I hope they take advantage of 4 chapters of a free ebook with Deepak Chopra, Jack Canfield, Dennis Waitley, and myself on my website, Joni Carley, JoniCarley.com. And I hope you consider getting my book from Amazon, The Alchemy of Power. Thanks so much for having me, Sharifa. I really enjoyed being here today.
You're so welcome. What is The Alchemy of Power?
Well, it's about the invisible factors of leadership. Again, you know, there's so much, what we see is just a little tiny bit, and yet we put all of our attention there. So we know through millennia that you know, I've studied and been through every kind of spiritual and human potential training and understanding, you know, I've distilled that into how do we think about these other factors. Where does purpose and doing good fit into having a successful business? How do you connect these dots? And how do you take a deeper cut on all this stuff and have it still make sense with what's on your desk right now? So every chapter ends with leadership reflections, and there's a lot of research that goes in this. So there's references in the back of the book. So it's really grounded, and yet it's very expansive because it all comes down to your consciousness. And so we deal with that in a very practical way.
Sounds interesting. I will definitely have to check it out, pick up a copy. I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the live show does not mean you're not important. That doesn't mean we don't still need your support. Whether you're watching the show in the archives, whether you're watching it 2 years from now, 2 months from now, it doesn't matter. We still want you to go ahead and support the show. And you can do that by sharing the show, but also visit our guests. Our guests are here this morning to help you, to provide you with resources, tips, strategies, and guidance. So support them. Visit their websites. Their link is in the Facebook post. Follow them on social media. Reach out to them. And when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help you with your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at AskSharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Bye-bye.